This podcast is brought to you by Link, simply the best place to learn languages. To learn from the following podcast, sign up for a free account at Link, lingq.com, where you can study the full transcript using Link's revolutionary learning tools. Hello and welcome back to the English Link podcast. Mark here with Steve.
Hello, this is Steve here.
Today we thought we would talk a little bit about political correctness. And, well, I guess let's begin with what happened to you this morning, yesterday morning.
Yes.
You were reading the newspaper,
right.
Local.
Well, political correctness is a term that comes up all the time. And I guess we should perhaps begin by explaining what it is. It refers to the fact that there's sort of a prevailing understanding that certain points of view are considered acceptable and certain points of view are not. And that the sort of what is acceptable in terms of political correctness is a certain, call it liberal, call it even left-wing, call it progressive point of view that so-called intellectuals and people who consider themselves more advanced than the
right.
average beer-drinking slob, that they have determined that this is the correct view politically,
mm-hmm.
and any view that sort of departs from this is not correct, and you're not allowed to express it. Now, we're exaggerating.
But not by much.
No, but, and it certainly, it depends on where you are. In some circles, like in the university circles, that's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And one example is I was reading in the newspaper that I read, which is called the National Post, and it's one of the two sort of more serious newspapers in Canada.
National newspapers,
even compared to the local newspapers. Those are the two papers.
For
and
sure.
Sort of more serious, less advertising, more serious articles. The National Post is a little more conservative. The Globe and Mail, which is the other one, is perhaps a little more. They're both very much in the center, and they have mm-hmm. a variety of opinion.
Right.
But if anything, the National Post is a little more conservative. The Globe and Mail is a little more liberal,
right.
so to speak. And so there was an article on this whole global warming debate, and I confess that I don't know what the story is on global warming.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of excitement about it. There was a lot of excitement about Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy for newspapers to create a tremendous amount of hype over these things. But I'm prepared to accept that if, in fact, there's even a possibility that human beings are causing what possibly could be a disastrous thing for the world, then we should do something about it.
Although it's no longer called global warming because, in fact, this decade, temperatures have been cooling.
Right.
So it's now climate change.
Climate change.
Right.
Whatever. I don't know what the story is, but here there's a debate, and I open my newspaper, and this one gentleman is refuting an article written by another fellow whose name is Lawrence Solomon and who has an organization, research organization called Energy Probe. And Lawrence Solomon has raised some questions about the famous hockey stick graph, which was
right.
used to explain how all of a sudden the world is getting a lot hotter, like the blade on a hockey stick. And so this person, whose name was Mann, Thomas Mann, Lawrence Mann, I can't remember his name, he attacks the position of Solomon. So I'm quite anxious to read this
mm-hmm.
because I want to know what are these positions. And he begins by saying that Lawrence Solomon has been writing in that tabloid, the National Post. Now, a tabloid refers to a newspaper. It used to be called the Yellow Press, or sensationalist newspapers typically are tabloid newspapers. There's the kind of newspaper that you buy to read on the bus going into work, and then you throw it away. Typically, they have a picture of a pinup girl in a bikini and the latest
right.
gossip about movie stars. And that's what a tabloid is. The National Post is not a tabloid. So to write off, beginning, before he gets into his subject, he slams the newspaper and calls it a tabloid, which it isn't. And then he calls this person Lawrence Solomon, he says that he's in the pay of the oil industry, which of course, I don't know if that's true or not. Of course, Lawrence Solomon is going to deny it. But the point is it really real? Like, what are your arguments? And so my point in all of this is that the politically correct side of the equation, and I've seen this in so many instances, they don't feel under any obligation to defend their views because the correctness of their views is a given. So all they have to do is call your names.
Right. And what doesn't surprise me, and when you said the guy's name was Mann, it sort of rang a bell for me, so I just looked him up. And
right.
In fact, he's one of the two guys that created the hockey stick graph, which sort of explains a lot of the vitriol he directed at
Michael Mann, that is his
guy,
name.
In the paper. And what's more, I mean, from what I know about the hockey stick graph, it was he and whoever worked together with him came up with this graph using whatever models. It was never corroborated by any other scientific
body or
anything, and was grabbed by the people putting together the Kyoto Protocol and pointed out as being the, this is it, here it is, the hockey stick graph. Michael Mann says so, so it's true. And in fact, there's any number of ways to crunch the data, which he used. Which was, I think, incomplete as well. I can't remember now, but there were two Canadian scientists that published a book totally disputing his findings and saying it was never corroborated. How can public policy be based on something that was a one-off? And obviously, this guy was motivated to show that climate change was human caused, and he managed to do so. It certainly doesn't prove anything, as far as I'm concerned.
It may still be caused by human activity. I'm not arguing either side.
But if that's the case, then explain how you did it, and have other people match your findings and corroborate and say, "Yeah, that's exactly right. We have found the same thing." And okay, then we start to believe you. But if it's a one off, and if you're challenged, your response is to attack the other party instead of explaining why your findings are correct. Well, then, and to my mind, that totally discredits your argument.
But, see, all this political correctness reminds me more than anything else of the kind of atmosphere that prevailed in the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. I'm serious, you know.
Absolutely.
When you were a scientist there, you had to come up with Nazi science, Russia, Soviet science.
Mm-hmm.
Objectivity was frowned upon.
Right.
It was the same in Europe. I mean, Copernicus or
Galileo,
they were fighting the orthodoxy of the church.
Absolutely.
So that there is an orthodoxy, and human beings are the same. Whether they're human beings in the 15th century, 16th century, 20th century, 21st century, there is a tendency for this kind of orthodoxy to become established.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're in these sort of intellectual circles, that's what you have to kowtow to. And another good example is this they talk about dialoguing now. Now we don't argue anymore, we dialogue.
Right.
Which is so ridiculous. The idea is that we shouldn't present our views with the idea of trying to persuade the other person. You know, we don't do that.
Right.
We kind of want to slide closer and closer together so that we can share each other's views and stuff. And the whole assumption is that you have to buy in to the common orthodoxy.
Right.
If I challenge the orthodoxy, there is no dialoguing.
No.
I think you're wrong for these reasons.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right for these reasons. And I have no illusions that I can persuade people who believe differently. And I'm quite skeptical as to the power of reason. Like, you start from a position and you try and defend it. But why shouldn't I be free to defend it?
Right.
To say what I want.
Because what you don't understand is you're wrong. You don't agree with me, so you're wrong. You don't agree with the orthodoxy, so you're wrong. It's so obvious that you're wrong that we don't even have to discuss it.
You know, it reminds me, I was having this discussion on this listserv, which is a community of people sending each other emails about language learning. And they were carrying on about literacy and how literacy, they said, was a social construct. I don't even understand what that word means. What is a social... Literacy is, can you read, you know?
Right.
But no, it's a social construct, and it's connected with... And this one lady, who was an American, wrote that literacy is, you know... First of all, we have to make sure people realize once they start to read, they're going to be inundated with propaganda in our society. Consumerism, capitalism, it's all bad. I'm serious. And ultimately, literacy is about... It's connected with democracy and republicanism, she said. Like, not as in the Republican Party, but republic, like a, not a monarchy, you know.
Right.
And so I wrote and I said, well, no, that's not really true. To me, literacy is just the ability to read. You can read the instructions on how to assemble furniture. You can read a religious tract. You can read Communist Party manifesto. You can read whatever you want.
Right.
Reading is just the ability to read. So she sends me a private email really, you know, she says, I don't understand. You shouldn't be so argumentative, and you should be trying to get closer to my points of view. And so I just went back to her privately, because first of all, I have no interest in communicating with her privately. And I went back and I said, I was quite rude. I sort of said, first of all, not everyone's an American. And so whether you're a republic or a monarchy or anything else is irrelevant to literacy.
Right.
And second of all, in fact, in many cases, those countries which had very authoritarian regimes have been more successful at raising literacy levels, mm-hmm. like in the Soviet Union, like in Cuba, mm-hmm. like in China,
right.
more successful than in democratic countries. Mm-hmm. There's no relationship between democracy and being a republic and literacy. There's no necessary relationship. And I said, the trouble with you is that you're full of all the gibberish, pseudo-academic nonsense that you absorbed uncritically at university.
Right.
So her answer to me was, please don't email me again. Well, you don't want to email me, you know.
Yeah. No, but that's typical. And they kind of get, a lot of people, unfortunately, get brainwashed more or less at university by all this politically correct propaganda, for want of a better term. I mean, there is only one point of view, so it's not surprising that university graduates come out with that point of view. And if anyone disagrees, then they're to be... certainly not to be argued with or debated with. They're to be stomped upon.
Well, again, on this website with all the English teachers, I mean, 90% of them believe that, you know, literacy should be taught in conjunction with social change and should be taught with critical thinking. But they never say critical thinking might include the right to totally disagree with what you're talking about. And that social change could be anything. We can change in one direction,
why
is it the obligation of the English teacher to impose his or her values, social values, on this poor Honduran refugee?
Fundamentally, I mean, you're to teach English. You're there to teach English. Just
right.
teach English. Who are you kidding? You're trying to brainwash people because you're trying to protect them. You know, don't mother these people. They're adults.
Right.
They can make their own opinions.
Right.
Just teach them the language if that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
That whole attitude, I just don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it's pervasive. It's pervasive in our school system.
It's pervasive. And what's more is we are there to protect you against the propaganda of the big business and, George Bush.
Right.
So instead of that, we're going to brainwash you with our, you know, mm-hmm. slant on society.
Right.
You know, there should be absolutely... all sides should be presented all the time. There
exactly.
should be no slant of any kind. But they think it's wrong. Theoretically, there's this propaganda, right-wing propaganda is being pushed at people, or consumerism, or whatever it is, and they're going to defend these people by pushing their own propaganda.
Exactly.
It's just totally hypocritical.
Life. They're quite and perfectly entitled to have those opinions.
Sure.
And gosh, maybe they're... points of view from a political perspective make more sense than mine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, because they have this hold over the people they're teaching. If they present them with political opinion, social opinion, they should present them with a balanced perspective. They have, whether it even on environmental issues, it is not their, you know, nothing annoys me more than when I see 6 and 7 year olds taken to a political rally. I don't care whether
right.
it's the fascist league of whatever. Or save the whales,
right.
bomb the bombs, whatever it might be. You shouldn't take 6-year-olds
right.
or 8-year-olds.
They're not interested, really.
They don't have an opinion
of
their own.
Opinion.
And if they have an opinion, it's the opinion that you fed them.
Right.
So I don't think that's fair. And anyway.
No. I mean, I know, my kids are at school here, and in the universities are particularly bad for political correctness, but so are the elementary schools and high schools. I mean, the prevailing... thought is certainly politically correct, and it definitely annoys me when the kids come home and, you know, our teacher said this or that about this or that political situation, and whether I agree with them or not, that's not the teacher's job. The
mm-hmm.
teacher's job is to teach math, reading, whatever the case may be. You
right.
teach them how to think, not mm-hmm. what to think.
Well, or you can't even teach them how. Give them, stimulate them.
Right.
Tell them about things,
mm-hmm.
things that are interesting. Give them a range of
right.
things. And the other thing they try to do at school is that, well, you know, today is our nice day, or we're going to be respectful, or we're going to be kind, or whatever. If the teacher is kind, if other people are kind, the kids pick up on this. And besides which, it's really up to the parents to inculcate these values.
Well, for sure. Like, come on. You mean that if we say this week we're going to talk about respect, that's going to make some kid who otherwise would walk around the playground beating other kids up is going to say, oh, this week is respect week. I'm just going to give out hugs. Like, I just don't buy it. It probably doesn't harm the kids, but on the other hand, that's time they could be spending doing something useful. That's the part that irritates me.
Exactly. They're far better off vis-a-vis their future lives to learn the skills they need.
Right.
And we're seeing a decline in the level of our skills. Get them reading. Mm-hmm. Get them discovering the world. They're going to discover more reading than they are from the teacher.
Right.
The teacher's role should be to stimulate them to go out and learn more things, not to say, teach them how to behave. Anyway, we've rambled on here.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we've
covered this subject. I guess the point we're trying to make is that we wish that those who are politically correct, and that includes many in universities and schools and the media, would just be a little more open. Be open to other points of view. Debate other points of view. Because, unfortunately, a debate just gets stifled. And more and more the debate is stifled about, you name it, doesn't matter which subject. The debates are stifled because if you don't agree with the politically correct point of view, not only are you obviously wrong, but you're to be stamped out and quieted.
And, you know, the other thing is this sense that certain kinds of activity are morally good and others are morally bad.
Right.
So working for a nonprofit is good. But in fact, most of the people who work in nonprofits, who work there, who volunteer, are relatively well off in our society.
Right.
And people who have benefited from society in one way or another. And they're interested in having their organization grow. Many of the people at the senior levels of these organizations and government organizations involved with them, they're flying off business class around the world to conferences. They've got a vested interest in their little empire.
Which
is no different from the vested interest of someone who's peddling Coca-Cola.
Or who is beating the drum for global warming.
Right.
Like I have a friend who is very much pro global warming, or not, at least, I don't know, pro global warming, but strongly supports it. But his livelihood depends on it.
Right.
He's employed by the university to prepare communities in this province on how to best deal with the approaching climate change. So yeah, he's going to be a believer. If climate change doesn't happen, he's out of a job. So he's not unbiased.
No.
Not at all. And famous environmentalists, you know, like Al Gore, who made that movie.
Who won the Nobel Prize?
Won the Nobel Prize. I mean, he's made a fortune off that. He's not. I mean, come on. I don't believe a word he says.
Well, I don't believe that he has any particular answers. No. On that. Anyway.
Anyway, I think we've beat this
We've beaten
this
subject to death here.
Yeah, to death.
Okay, we were looking forward to hearing some angry response from our listeners.
Absolutely. We wish we had someone with us here who disagreed with us.
Right. We don't let them in here.
No.
No, we listen.
Anyway, we'll talk to you again next time.
Okay.